Welcome to the ISF Podcast from the Information Security Forum. The ISF Podcast is hosted by ISF CEO Steve Durbin, and every episode he brings listeners features timely conversations, practical insights, and resources for global cybersecurity professionals. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. Today, Steve sits down with strategic supply chain risk expert Omera Khan to discuss current risk landscape vis-a-vis supply chain, protecting the supply chain by building collaborative systems, and appropriately incentivizing staff to ensure they vet suppliers with a security-first mindset.
So, Omera, lovely to see you. Thanks for popping into the podcast. Let's talk about risk and risk management. You're obviously a supply chain expert. When you're working with supply chains, or when our members are working with supply chains, it can very often feel like an obstacle course of risks. You know, one thing after another pops up that you have to take into account. And businesses generally are pretty good at managing operational risk because they've been doing that for some while. But supplier information risk management remains the poor relation, I would say. So how can organizations, in your view, get a real handle on it? And how can they ensure security will not really be missed out when they look at that overall picture of how to manage supply chain risk today?
It's a really good question, Stephen. First of all, thank you very much for inviting me here to be here at the podcast. I think, the key word here is collaboration. Mm-hmm. And when we often think about collaboration, people assume that as long as we're talking nicely with our suppliers, that we're collaborating. But it's a little bit more than that. We need to collaborate on information. We need to have greater visibility of where products lie in this very extended supply chain. Because it's only when we have visibility of the sort of critical pinch points that we can ascertain or detect where risks may occur and where, of course, they may multiply. So collaboration is really the key word here in trying to understand that how can we together through a much more collaborative efforts, through our collaborative systems, be that collaborative shared information and so forth, can we work together minimizing risk? And I think it's this awareness of understanding that a risk that may occur in our suppliers will ultimately impact our own supply chains, mm-hmm. You know? So we have to shift our understanding that we can just push or spread risks down the chain or up the chain as long as it doesn't affect us. A risk that occurs anywhere in that link or node of a relationship will ultimately affect a business operations. But I think it's also understanding suppliers need to share information. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't fear being transparent when their own operations may come to a screeching halt, right, or some key components that they are trying to get hold of. They've got to make sure that they are being open and fearless of sharing the right information with their supply chain partners. So I think it's a process that needs to evolve over time, but we need to build trust in the relationship and ensure that we're not giving away any competencies, or we're not reducing our competitive edge because we're sharing, you know, relevant information. It really is through shared information and through collaborative partnerships that we can really get a true handle of risks in our supply chains.
You mentioned two things there that I find quite interesting. You talk about collaboration and you talk about trust. And what immediately comes to my mind is, yes, of course, that's where we need to get to. But for very many years, supply chain partners have had to deal with the evil of the organization, procurement, where the procurement people are measured on how much they can reduce the cost of supply, some even being bonused on that. And for me, there seems to be a conflict between that approach and this collaborative, trusting, open approach where perhaps there are SLAs in place that are punitive from a financial standpoint. How do organizations reconcile those two things?
Yeah, it's a very good point, Steve. And I think this is all about utilizing the appropriate KPIs. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think we've not shifted on our focus on over the years is that whilst we're changing the outputs almost of what the requirements are, so let's say be that let's develop more agility or responsiveness in our supply chains, we've not shifted the KPIs. And we really need to make sure that we are managing, you know, we're rewarding the appropriate behavior, because performance drives behavior. If mm-hmm. we're still measuring our procurement guys on cost, then of course they're going to drive that behavior. So we have to ensure that we are utilizing the appropriate KPIs that drives the right kind of performance outcome, because otherwise we're going to constantly be at loggerheads. We're setting the motion and strategically saying we must be more collaborative and have a trust and a more responsive-based relationship, whilst at the same time, you know, expecting the procurement folks to make sure it's still the lowest cost possible. Well, then there's a conflict of interest there. Mm-hmm. So I think this is where we really need to really make a little bit more ground here. We've got to understand that whilst we start changing that environment, we must also make sure we measure and drive the right performance behavior, because that will then drive the right performance outcomes.
And in your experience, because you talk to a lot of people in both the public and private sector, what is your perspective today on how supply chains have matured from that collaborative trust perspective versus where they were, let's say, 2 years ago, pre-pandemic?
I think that a lot more companies are beginning to recognize the importance of working together. And I think partly that agenda has been very much driven by the whole building a more sustainable supply chain. So mm-hmm. how do we become more sociable, equitable, and a responsible supply chain? So I think that's partly been driving that behavior of a much more collaborative organization. I think also the fact that so many companies were basically, they were surprised by the risks that they faced during COVID, not having access to key components when they needed, a shortage of semiconductor chips, for example. I mean, we moved from a just-in-time system to a just-in-case system, but the supply chain wasn't ready for that. So I think there was a lot of shock waves that rippled through supply chains during COVID. That really was a wake-up call for much of the industry to recognize that, you know, it's by together and it's through a much more partnership approach that we can, one, detect when something's going to happen, and we can hedge those risks together. We can share the damages perhaps together. Mm-hmm. It's through those kind of mechanisms, I think, that's really driving the maturity of a much more collaborative way of working. I think also, you know, looking ahead a little bit, I really do think the collaborative partnership approach will, we will see a lot more of that as we start working cooperatively more together. So it's understanding that, you know, we, our competitor may be actually our best partner at times mm-hmm. when we need to share or gain access to vital warehouse space, for example, right? We don't want to necessarily build new warehouses now that we might be shifting to a much more localized or regional space, but it's about gaining that knowledge or gaining bandwidth in the supply chain by accessing space in distribution centers or warehouses when we may most require it. So I think going forward, we are going to see a lot more of a collaborative approach, both across our supply chains, vertically and horizontally and so forth. And I really do think it's the whole sustainability, climate change agenda that is one of the driving forces for that. But then I think digital technologies are also an enabler of allowing these things to mm-hmm. also mature and happen. So I think, you know, I think it's a really fascinating time for us to be in supply chains right now. We have a lot more enablers through the technologies, through Industry 4.0, that are allowing us to access 3D printing technology in collaboration with machine learning, in collaboration with AI. But at the same time, we can't forget the people in our supply chain as well, because it's the people who are driving some of these metrics and these performances as well. So I think we are really shifting from an adversarial transaction-based approach to supply chain management to a much more collaborative supply chain, I think, to a world where we're in an ecosystem of supply chains, which includes our customers and our customers' customers. So I think we really are going to see a new landscape in supply chains very soon. If not, we're already beginning to see that.
Mm. Now, you've raised a few red flags there from a security standpoint. You've mentioned things like AI, machine learning, people. Mm. Security professionals listening to this will be thinking to themselves, you know, crikey, those are all areas that I've really got to try to address from a security standpoint. So let's talk about security within the supply chain structure and more importantly, perhaps within this new evolving supply chain that you're positing around sort of collaboration and trust. What is the role then of security in the new supply chain?
I think the role of security in the new supply chain is huge, and it will remain bigger, because what happens is that as we start developing this ecosystem, you know, we need to protect mm-hmm. the key stakeholders across this system. Whilst technologies are enablers, they also expose us to greater vulnerabilities because we're opening up our systems. We're saying we need to be more shared and more collaborative. And I think that, you know, we have very sophisticated systems now, you know, thanks to ISF as well. We have more measures and we're more educated and more trained in understanding that security is relevant. It's a prerequisite for us even having a successful supply mm-hmm. chain. And I think we, just as we are evolving in this new supply chain landscape, so too do our security systems need to keep pace with that change. But you're absolutely right. When a system changes, the security needs to also change and adapt to this new world. So I've got no doubt in my mind that we will always need security and it will be a much bigger part of our supply chains, particularly when we look at the geopolitical uncertainties around the world.
Right.
We look at how vulnerable we now are to a lot of hidden risks. And not all of these are hidden. We actually know some of the risks that we face, but it's the detection of those risks that becomes quite difficult. And I think what we have to just ensure and maybe accept is that we may not be able to secure every part of our supply chain, but what we can do is be proactive about that if something gets shut down or if something is compromised, how resilient is our system that it can almost harness that a security breach, for example, or that uncompromised activity that may happen, but be able to still continue as normal or can restart. It's almost like as if it's like a bit of a lightning strike might occur and shut down the system for a few seconds. But as a generator, we just evolve our supply chain. So I think that we're not going to be able to detect every risk, but what we must make sure is that as we manage our supply chains, it's about securing that management of that supply chain as well. And that's why I think when we look at resilient, security is actually a big part of that resilient thinking, that resilient mindset. Resilience is not only about looking and identifying risks, but it's actually about saying when an attack occurs, because it will occur and it will occur several times, how do we make sure that our systems are not that compromised that it shuts us down for too long?
But we live in a world of highly complex, highly evolved existing supply chains, right? Where many organizations may not even know who is in the supply chain. So we're pretty good at level one. We're not too bad at level two. Level three, we're starting to get a little bit, maybe. And beyond that, we haven't got the first clue in a lot of organizations. So again, looking at it through the security and indeed risk management lens, how can we get better visibility over the entirety of the supply chain? Mm. So to your point, we can build in resilience and we do know how we can respond much more effectively to not necessarily a breach, but maybe theft of intellectual property. And so help people a little bit with that dilemma.
Yeah, well, it's a big dilemma. And what we're seeing is that there's a lot of companies out there now who are trying to become integrators of the end-to-end digital supply chain. And I think one of the premises of that is to give some comfort and hope to customers in the supply chain with a fully integrated end-to-end digital solution and almost take ownership of the detectability or the security of that supply chain. I think that we're not at a place where we will be able to detect and be aware of every risk that may occur in these complex supply chains. But I go back to my earlier point, it's about understanding the flexibility of our supply chain, that it's able to withstand a risk or a disruption when it occurs, and they can be resilient towards that. I think I don't have a clear-cut answer for quite how we can have a visibility of all risks. I think it goes back to the point of if we share information on real time, it's through shared information systems and that continuous intelligence and monitoring of our supply chain that can certainly help us to better secure our systems, our processes, and our people. And we see a lot of companies now, you know, Maersk is a really good example of this, where, you know, since the big issue that they faced not so long ago with Nampatia, we've seen an increased security setup within the operations, and it goes through their systems, through their process, through, you know, with the people. But I think there's probably more to come with this. I'm not an expert on information security, but I think it's getting a better alignment with information security professionals across the supply chain, that will certainly be a big benefit as well. I think in the past, we've seen information security folks working in a completely different setup to the supply chain folks. And I really do think there's a strong need now and a desire that as we work towards becoming an end-to-end digital supply chain, we therefore need to walk the path. We need to march on that path together. So I think there's a greater reliance now on information security professionals working closer with the supply chain professionals.
I would agree. I think it's for me anyway, it's all about integration of those two. You know, what you don't want is this silo mentality again, because, and I think it applies outside of supply chains as well. What we're trying to do is to get security much closer to the business, much closer to an environment where actually we do have security by design, rather than trying to retrofit security to some, you know, problem that we've suddenly come across, which is going to actually take us away from what we should be doing because we're trying to fix something.
Yeah.
What's your take on wargaming? You know, getting everybody involved to actually plan for the day when the supply chain goes down again. Because I'm thinking back to the pandemic and, you know, Maersk, I think, was in a pretty good position because they'd had to deal with a situation pre-pandemic. So arguably, that's one company that we could think of immediately that was probably better equipped. But there were lots of other organizations that really hadn't come across this kind of situation, didn't know where to go. And the answer to me, again, would seem to be relatively obvious, which is we need to plan for it and we need to practice it. What's your take on that?
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%, Steve. I think the world that we live in today is characterized by a lot more turbulence, volatility, uncertainty. We're facing disruptions on a constant basis today than we've ever done before. And we certainly need to accelerate the security. I think just going back to the point you made earlier as well is that security is not an add-on. Security should be embedded within the resilience framework or the supply chain risk framework, whatever a company wants to call it. It's embedded within that strategy. And just as we have regular checks on whether the alarm works, the smoke alarm works, so too must we check, you know, whether if all systems fail, what are we going to do about it? And it's developing the foresight. What we need to do is we can't predict the future, but what we can do is scenario plan.
Right.
We can scenario plan and see, therefore, what the future may look like. And therefore, based on those scenarios, create a range of options that we may take to ensure the future security and resilience of our firm. I think too little companies are investing in something like this that I think could be life and savior for these businesses. And I think that's why when we look at some of these world-class supply chains that have not just survived, but thrive in climates where often a risk can be a catalyst for change, they thrive because they're very much more forward-thinking. They have the strategic foresight to understand that, look, we designed to plan for this future where maybe there was an energy crisis, there may have been a pandemic. We've stress test our supply chain enough to ensure that when bad things happen to us, we're able to basically bounce back up from that environment. So I think that everyone should be stress testing, wargaming their supply chains and being prepared of a future that is unknown. Because if there's one thing we've learned in the last decade, is that there are a lot more unknowns out there than we can ever plan for. If that's the way it is, then our supply chains must also be able to plan for that. And I think that's why flexibility is a key thing here. We talk a lot about having flexible supply chains. Mm-hmm. How can we, of course, we all want to have an efficient supply chain. Of course, we want to have a lean enough supply chain in order to maximize our profits and so forth, right? But a lean supply chain often can be a little bit like blindfolding a race driver and saying, just drive the car, win the race. Because there's no point in having a perfectly efficient supply chain if it can be snapped as soon as a disruption occurs. Mm-hmm. So what we've got to really look at here is it's new ways of working. I think going back to that point, you know, we have regular sound checks. I used to work at a university. Once a week, there'd be an alarm check. Well, what happens if the alarm goes off? We've got to go out of this door. We do that at conferences, right? There's house rules of it shouldn't alarm. It's not going to be a test. So why don't we do the same with our supply chains? I mean, why do you think, Steve, why are supply chains not investing in something that can significantly mean, you know, opportunity or failure for them? Why is that?
I think if I look back over the last few years, organizations have become, I would say, overly focused on cost. Yeah. What that has then lent them to do is to drive towards, to your point, a much leaner supply chain, which has inevitably meant more globalization in the supply chain. And there hasn't been that management of risk. There hasn't been that anybody asking the question, what happens when it goes wrong? And that, I think, was just a fatal flaw in most supply chains, because it was this big drive towards getting product to market much more quickly, much more effectively, much more cheaply than your competitor. And for me, anyway, what the pandemic did was call a big halt to that. The pandemic then was followed by a situation in the Ukraine, and very many people still say to me today they didn't know actually how much came from the Ukraine and how pivotal it was to things like shipping lanes and all of those implications. So I think that we became very blasé. I think we didn't view it in its entirety. And my question back to you, I guess, is do you think that we're now going to see much more localization of the supply chain, bringing things back in-house or in-country and a move away from globalization? How do you see that evolving?
I think it very much depends on industries. We are not able to localize every supply chain because we just simply don't have the capacity to do so. We don't have the skills to do so. In many industries, when there was a huge exodus, for example, in the 90s of offshore manufacturing or even before that, and we've made massive investments abroad, it's also very difficult to keep up, for example, with the investments we made in China and the cost there, which obviously we started seeing cost rises there too. I think what the disruptions are making folks realize is that we certainly need to redesign our supply chains. I don't believe globalization is, we're not seeing the end of globalization for sure. But I think what some companies are realizing, Schneider Electric is an example I gave in my keynote earlier, was a company that now 85% of their supply chain they're regionalizing. So not localizing, but regionalizing. So I think that for some companies, particularly for some less complex companies, there's an e-scooter company I can give an example of, which is based in Estonia, that is struggling, even with a pretty simple product, but is struggling to localize the manufacturing of that supply chain as much as they would like to, because they just cannot access the capacity. And by capacity, I mean they cannot access the suppliers who could make the parts of the components that they require to build this e-scooter. And that's because, do you know why that is, Steve? Because after, as you rightly said about COVID, many more companies like that company have also figured out, well, we need to come closer to our customer. We need to come closer to home so our supply chains are not disrupted. So there's a waiting line. There was a waiting line of, we can do this for you, sure, but in 4 years' time.
Right.
So what do you do? So folks are not regionalizing or localizing because there's not just capacity or access to suppliers to rebuild the product closer to home. It's because there's a waiting line, because other folks have got, or bigger folks have got ahead of that line. So where do we go? So it's not always an issue of, can we redesign our supply chain closer to home? It's we simply haven't got access to that capacity, not to the levels that we had when we globalized our supply chains. So it's a waiting game. So I think that in many folks, there is a mindset change in recognizing that in order to, now that we've understand the complexity of how global supply chains can be disrupted from COVID, from the energy crisis, from the Ukraine war, and they're starting to shift closer, but they cannot access the capacity. And capacity is also not about just suppliers. It's also about the skilled people. Where do we get the skilled labor from? You know, if we just take textiles as an example of an industry that outsourced and offshored its manufacturing in the late 80s and 90s, we saw a massive exodus of the British textile industry abroad. It's not as simple as just hitting the rewind button and saying, come back, because most of those factories, including my family's factory, it's shut down a long time ago. We've moved into, we started seeing the evolvement of omnichannel.
Right.
you know, working without Amazon and ordering online. We shut down our factories. We don't have that skill set anymore. And in an industry like textiles, where handicraft skills are really required, we simply don't have them because we don't teach. We're not training for that in our fashion marketing or fashion textile courses anymore. And I know that because in the early 2000s, I did a BSc in textile design. I was in the weaving sheds at sunrise, threading the thousands of needles to make the fabric. We simply don't train our future textile designers to do that. We're teaching them how to do retailing and omni-channel strategies and so forth. We're teaching them more on the management service level. So how do we hit the reset button and say, let's just go back to how we do things? It's not a simple formula like that. Mm-hmm. So I understand the sentiment. You know, I work in supply chain risk and resilience as a researcher. I understand the drivers for mitigating our risks and to ensure more resilient supply chain. This is what I talk about. We've got to build agility. We've got to build flexibility. But what we have to think about here is really not as simple as saying, let's move from here to here. It's going to be a shift that will take years. What we have to do is be committed to some of these shifts. And that's why I think in the ecosystem of the new supply chain, security professionals, competitors of supply chains, right? Asset owners, we all need to work collaboratively together if we are going to be serious about mitigating the disruptions that we have seen of late. We're going to have to be more collaborative in how we share those risks up and down our chains. It's not going to be achieved through some industries monopolizing capacity, for example. If the P&Gs and the Unilevers get in their face, like the Schneider Electrics, for example, they regionalize the supply chains, right? So there's a whole waiting line. How does that poor e-scooter guy now in Estonia, which, by the way, makes up most of the e-scooters for the European market, it's in a waiting line for 4 years, so it simply cannot shift its production right now from Vietnam, and hence it is still occurring the disruptions from the Suez Canal blockage mm-hmm. that we had just recently, right? So, right. And it's still actually experiencing the disruption of that Suez Canal. You know, we're still seeing challenges in China ports, you know, which are shut down because they have a zero COVID philosophy. So there's lots of challenges out there. There's no doubt about the reasoning for coming back closer to home, but there's a whole load of risks that are not receding in just that decision-making as well. So there's a lot we've got to think about before we simply say, is it as easy as going from globalization to regionalization to localization? I understand the sentiment, fully agree with it, but I think we've got a long way to go to really make that a reality.
So lots of practical issues that we really need to overcome in the short term. Longer term, I guess we'll all have to just wait and see how the supply chains evolve and develop. Amira, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much indeed for dropping by the podcast. It's a great conversation. Very much enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve. Thank you.
Thanks to this week's guest, Amira Khan. We'll be back with a new episode in a week. In the meantime, as always, we ask that you take 10 seconds to pull up this podcast on whatever device you're listening and give us a 5-star rating. If you have a little more time, you can even write a quick review. That helps other listeners who might enjoy our content find us. And we also want to make sure to introduce you to the ISF Analyst Insight podcast, which goes in depth on the hottest topics in information security. In every episode, ISF analysts hand-select active security professionals from ISF member organizations to discuss how the implementation of ISF research is uniquely applied to their real-world context. We hope you'll listen, and of course, we'll put a link to that show in our show notes. If there's a topic or a question that you'd like us to cover in a future episode, let us know at securityforum.org, which is also where you can find our catalog of past video and podcast episodes, as well as ISF's research, practical tools, and guidance related to discussions like today's. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox and Tavia Gilbert, with music by Alexander Filipiak, senior producer Katie Flood, mix and master by Kayla Elrod. Thanks for listening.